Bum, 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 bum. And we're back.
What's up, everybody?
Me and Nick were having a little bit of an off-topic conversation. We were talking about planets and life on other planets, and usually it would be a conspiracy type of conversation, but I think I'm right. My view is that there may be other planets in the world, or not the world, in the universe that have the conditions set to create life. We just haven't f either found one yet, or two, just it could be small life. But the point is, there may be life, but or at least planets that could hold life, but we just haven't found them yet. And on top of that, I'm also a firm believer that if there is other life, I still think that we are the most developed. I mean, that's more of like I'm pulling that one from like an Elon Musk type of idea. But we have a pretty far reach. I would say that if there was other life out there that was intelligent and surpassed us, that we would have made some sort of slight connection by now. What about you?
Well, so my opinion is that there is a chance that there's life on other planets way out there. So like the statistic is we only know 4% of the universe. The other 96% we can't see, detect, or even comprehend. So the thing for me when it comes to that statistic, we only know 4%. What if someone's on all the way on the other edge, but they have the ability to see 10%, but still not far enough to see what we see? And then also the idea that yes, on Earth, carbon-based life is the only life we know of. But the idea that there isn't elements or that aren't on Earth but are on other planets that we haven't seen yet, or anything like that, really. Or like, we only comprehend things as 'cause of what we know.
Sure, but the point is, I think that assuming that knowing what we know about this universe, assuming that the conditions to create life exist somewhere else out there, I think that's possible. For you to insinuate that there's other things that can make life, but just none of it's in our universe that we know so far, I think that's a little bit harder because we know a lot about the universe. I think if there's other conditions that could create life other than the ones that we know of, then we would also have found that by now. If like if you could, if there was if life could be created out of pick a substance like plutonium, if you could have a little plutonium like organism running around, I think we would have discovered that element by now. I think it's safe to say that the conditions needed to create life, which is carbon and whatever else, air or water, is we can validly say that those are the conditions needed for life.
Well, so that's what we know of. What I'm trying to say is basically, like, humans can't live on Mars without a suit, practically, you know? So what I'm saying is that there's other life organisms out there that we've never heard of or ever seen or even can comprehend that can live in an environment like Mars.
Would they be carbon-based, though?
Who knows? They could be carbon-based, but with a different makeup. Like I guess the way I would explain it, how fishes have gills so they could live underwater.
Sure.
I could imagine something like that,
Who knows?
but something that
Another
I
thing, I
can't even
guess,
think of it,
another
but.
issue is that people, the average person is so unable to comprehend even like the science behind it that we don't really even have it. We're just talking like a slightly intelligent conversation right now. But there was one thing, I think it was Eric Weinstein. Which one is it? Not Eric, what's the other one? Brett, which is the math
Yep.
guy.
I think it's Eric.
I think it's not. Regardless, the one that's really good at math, he was talking about some physics theory, and he said the people that are that know enough about physics to even make a advancement or even to create something more in the field are so limited that it's you know, there may be a handful, like legitimately, well, more than five, but there may be less than 100 people on this planet that know enough to actually discover something. Because if you think about it, you look at like basic math or basic biology or physics, you know, they teach us one thing in elementary school, and then you get to the next in high school, and then you get to the college, and they're like, okay, that stuff is false. This is actually the rules. And the biggest way you can look at it is the, what are those three theories in the, is it the, now you're making me look dumb, Nick, but anyways, when you go to college,
like Newton's three theories.
What?
Are you talking about Newton's three theories?
Right. Those theories. Anyways, when you go to college, like I have friends that are in like physics majors and whatnot. And when you go to college and you actually buckle down in that, they'll tell you, they're like, okay, we just simplified it to those three theories. But really there's ways that prove they're false. And these are all the variations of it and whatnot. And so if that's the case, Weinstein is saying that on the next level, when you become a professional, like become one of these top 100 people that actually understand the inner workings of physics, that it changes again. And it's like, all of that was bullshit that we just told them, simplify it and for teaching purposes. But in reality, this is how it works. And so it's, I guess my point is simply, what do we know? Like, do you think, I'm under the opinion with just human nature that all these scientists just sleep in, go to work at like 11, have a cup of coffee, take a long lunch, and don't actually do much work because all they have to do is tell us that they're working on some, you know, particulate matter theory, and we keep paying them. I don't know if that's the case, but
I'm not sure. I don't personally have, I guess, a drive to be a scientist myself, so I don't really know what it takes to be a top-level scientist, like the handful that you're talking about?
It's just bold to me because I'm totally going to seem ignorant by saying this, but how useful is it at this point? I'm not going to say that we discovered everything, but we've discovered a lot of only stuff. 4%. And outside of technological advancements in the future, how much more do we really need to know about, you know, atoms and stuff? I might sound stupid, but maybe we discovered all we needed, and now.
I think it's mostly people looking for more answers. So like we have the Big Bang Theory right now, and people want to know. I guess people want to know if there's stuff before the Big Bang Theory, or how exactly all of it worked. Something that I've always found crazy is like dark matter or dark energy. Like I don't even know what it is. It's just like, a lot of these people who study it don't know what it is. They just know it's a thing out there. They just
can't. Right, and that goes into like, so this is another thing that interests me, is that scientists will say that they know things and have discovered things that aren't, that we don't have the technology yet to actually implement or study. They just know that based on the laws of physics, like this exists. So for instance, when you talk about nuclear bombs, they say you have a fission bomb, which is new. That's what the first one was you're separating particles, right? You're splitting atoms and it's exploding. Then they have a fusion bomb, which is the hydrogen bomb, and it's you're fusing them together, right? So you're making atoms collide, and then it creates like a 10,000 times stronger explosion. And then they say the next step is an antimatter bomb. But we just don't have the technology, but that would be like a million quadrillion times stronger, and it would just destroy the world or whatever. And the question is, okay, so I'm glad you understand that, but you saying you don't have the technology to make it happen. So is that the goal then? Is it like within our reach, or is it them just talking about, yeah, it would be cool to have lightsabers and, you know, have the force?
Well, the thing about the antimatter bombs, wouldn't antimatter really just necessarily just like make it disappear almost? Not necessarily blow it up? Because you're getting rid of the matter.
We're talking too big.
Well, I'm just saying, antimatter, I'm assuming it means like you're getting rid of the matter. You're getting rid of the thing.
No, that's there. No, what it is. So an anti, yeah. So the antimatter is right. So first of all, I'm gonna stop you there, and we're gonna stop ourselves now because we're gonna say something that's just totally not true. But the idea, it's not about necessarily the absence of matter. It has to do with like the molecules. It has to do with the alignments of protons, neutrons, and electrons, and things like that. So that's what it is. And the point is they're saying it's possible, and I guess the fear could be, what happens if one day we do develop the technology? Can one country say, the rest of the world, we own you now, or else we're going to drop this bomb and your entire country will incinerate in instantly?
Are you looking it up right now? Too. Well, I'm looking at what exactly would an antimatter bomb do.
Right. Antimatter weapon.
So what this says is the fictional bomb works by touching 1 gram of matter to 1 gram of antimatter, a substance made of subatomic particles with properties opposite of those of normal matter particles, causing them to annihilate in a tremendous explosion.
And it also says here that the reason we can't produce yet is the cost to produce antimatter, estimated $63 trillion per gram of antimatter.
Wait, we've produced antimatter?
I would assume not, since it takes $63 trillion per gram to make. So, which is at least...
That's a lot.
Here we go. Okay.
So,
right. So we're talking... They're talking right, joule.
So, just real quick. So, another thing was, does antimatter destroy matter? And what this says is, it was once thought that matter could neither be created nor destroyed. But we now know that energy and mass are interchangeable. When a particle collides with its antiparticle, the two annihilate each other, with their mass being entirely converted into energy.
Okay, that's what it is. Yep. But, you know, what does it mean? So here we go. The global production of rate per year is 1 to 10 nanograms. The global production rate per year is only 1 to 10 nanograms.
Milligrams?
At the cost of US $20 million, they created an 80 at the current rate of production about 250 years. So okay, how about this? We'll go with this. To create a normal size hydrogen bomb, you need about 250 grams of antimatter, which will take 2.5 billion years of the energy production of the entire Earth to produce. Regardless, this is my point here, and this is really, we're gonna close it up here because we got a lot more things to talk about. My point here is, you're talking about this. You're talking $6.3 trillion. You're talking about 2.5 billion years of energy to produce it. Okay, I'm glad that they have created the graphs to statistically analyze and say that this is what it's gonna take to make it. But it is so outlandish and so unfeasible that, is it even worth mentioning? Is it even viable? Like, how precise are these statistics? $63 trillion. You know what I mean? How precise is...
Well, I feel like you could also say that, looking at this, maybe people aren't working towards how to make an antimatter bomb. They're more looking towards at more efficient ways to make antimatter. And then if sure, that is essentially what they're doing... Is antimatter something we want? Do we want to have antimatter bombs? I know it could be used for other energy sources, but
I don't think we want antimatter bombs. But then that goes into the question: did we want nuclear bombs? I don't know.
Yeah, but that's a whole another argument. Like, would the war have kept going without the nuclear bomb?
So that would be the question now. Are we blaming the relative peace, even though you can argue we don't have peace, but the relative peace or lack of a world war due to the, the creation of nuclear bombs that basically make us not want to kill each other, potentially. I don't know. It's how long has it been since our last world war? What? 70 years? A little more, a little less? No. So, I mean, the first world war was in the 1910s, so then there was about 40 years. So now we've made it almost twice as long as the between the first two world wars. Can we really say that there's not going to be another world war, or have we just not reached that point yet? Regardless.
It's a question for the philosophers.
We'll leave it to the philosophers. Me and Nick are all about solutions here, as you'll hear about more in the very near future as we continue to dissect some interesting things. Nick wanted to talk about a judicial case, so we'll let him start off with that.
So
it's going to be a touchy subject.
There's a story. Yeah, it's going to be very touchy. There's just a story recently about an illegal immigrant. He was a MS-13 member who, in Long Island, was convicted of murder. He spent 15 years in jail in the U.S. and then was deported. And he was just arrested by ICE in New York because he snuck back into the country and made it all the way to New York again.
Right.
So I guess the reason why I bring this up is just, it's interesting. We've talked about roughly a similar thing before on the show. And I guess it's just more news to it.
Right.
So I thought we should talk about it.
I would argue, so Nick is talking about it in an interesting manner. He's talking about what he's pushing towards is more of an idea of should we have better immigration policies? Should there be a wall? That would be the mainstream argument that you would be hearing from, let's say, the Republicans or the right-wing people is, okay, should we have a wall? And I think the argument's a little bit different because in my head, instead of just saying, well, we should have a wall because there's these criminals that are illegal immigrants, my point is there's criminals everywhere. There's criminals that are illegal immigrants. There's criminals that are American immigrants, or not American immigrants, but just Americans. And my point is, I think that you're entitled to certain rights by being a citizen that you're not entitled to by being an illegal immigrant. So the way the left likes to spin the story is you're just hating on immigrants. You're saying that immigrants are criminals, and you're saying that there's no criminals that are Americans. You know what I mean? Like, you're being racist. And my point is, no, I'm not saying that. I'm completely acknowledging the fact that there's hundreds of thousands of criminals in the U.S. that do just as heinous things that are illegal. My point is, I think you're entitled to a certain level of rights as an American citizen. For instance, if you are peddling drugs in a foreign country and you get arrested, let's say you're in Thailand or you're in Mexico and you're trying to sneak drugs on a plane to bring them here, and you get caught, what happens as an American? You have a well-dressed, suited-up lawyer that comes from the embassy and works to make sure that you're treated fairly and in some cases gets you extradited to the United States for punishment. Sometimes the country won't let you, which happens a lot in Thailand. There's people that have spent, you know, 20 years in a Thai jail. Sounds sketchy to me. But either way, the embassy is going to be there to ensure that that country knows that you're an American citizen. That's a right you have. You have a right that no matter where you are in the world, you're an American citizen and America's got your back. So if you're going to say that there's people in America that are just as vile, if not worse, criminals than this guy, that's true, but they're an American. You know what I mean? The question would be, so should we, just because Americans are also criminals, does that mean that we should be allowing illegal criminals into the country? That's where I think the conversation needs to be had. Is this something that is just an aspect of immigration in general, and it's worth allowing, you know, illegal immigration to happen based on the humanitarian aspects of it? But we're also letting criminals in sometimes? Or is it like one criminal illegal immigrant is not okay because they shouldn't be here at all? What do you think, Nick? I kind of talked for a minute there.
Well, so when it comes to the wall, for example, I think at the end of the day, the wall doesn't matter just because the wall is just a band-aid for a problem. It's not the solution. And like Mason said, we like solutions more. You can have a wall, and then at the end of the day, it still comes down to how we handle immigration. If we're going to have borders open, anyone could come here as they please. Will they be treated exactly the same? Or will they be, I don't want to say second class citizens, because that's, it's kind of against the whole freedom thing and everyone being equal. But they also, you can't just have, I guess a good example is like the welfare state. If we have open immigration in a welfare state, which allows immigrants to come here and use our welfare programs, that kind of, it's unfeasible, first of all. And then it just also makes it, it would be uncontrollable. We would have people coming to our country and we'd be overpopulated very quickly.
Right. So that's...
If we had closed border, you know what I mean?
Right. So the thing is, that's the thing here, is we have, you know, opposing viewpoints being held by the same people. So, but one of the major facets of being a liberal, being a Democrat, whatever you want to call it, is you value people over, you know, facts per se. And then you'll hear people like Ben Shapiro say, facts don't care about your feelings. You know, understood. You can have a conversation where there's some people that have these liberal ideals that are so unfeasible that it's like we're just talking unicorns and, you know, candy bars. You know what I mean? And it's not feasible. But for you as a person to say, I'm willing to forego economic certainty because I care about people, you know, that's good. That's, you can do that. You could say, I care more about people than, you know, having some extra money in my bank account, whatever. That's a feasible argument. And that's kind of the liberal perspective. And I don't fault you for having that idea, but it's something like this where it's, we want everyone to be an immigrant in this country, but we're also pursuing a welfare state. Those is where it's kind of opposing each other. If you want people to have more access to social programs, more access to, I'll call it free money, even though it can come in, I think it should come in forms of business loans and things like that. But if you want that, you can't also say anyone can just come here freely, because when you do have a welfare state, what happens is you have more people trying to come here to take advantage of it. So that's why you don't see people, you don't see illegal immigrants flooding into other countries. You see them flooding into America because America has, quote unquote, more opportunity and, quote unquote, more social programs. You can't have both. It's infeasible. Then it starts changing from I care about people to it's not possible. You can't just let anyone walk into a country and then also give everyone free money. It's just, it can't work out. So I'm of the opinion that we have a differentiation between American citizen and non-American citizen. And we say, if we want to have social programs, you know, let's do it. But that's for Americans. It is economically feasible to provide for Americans and have social programs that give them opportunities in the forms of free money and whatever aspect that it's going to come in, whether it's UBI or welfare or, you know, business loans or anything like that. It's possible, but it's got to be for Americans. It's got to be for a group of people that we choose to care about. If you say it's the entire world, then how is America going to take care of 7.5 billion people? It's not going to happen. You have to draw the line somewhere. And that should be the conversation, you know, but the left is trying to play both sides. They're trying to say borders are useless. Everyone can come in. But at the same time, everyone should be given a universal basic income. And that, I mean, that's a little bit unfeasible at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I meant by it. It's a much larger issue than just a wall can fix.
Oh, of course, 100%.
A wall wouldn't fix our immigration problem, or it wouldn't solve anything. We talk about it all the time. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but criminals are going to be criminals no matter what. I don't think a wall will stop them from being criminals.
And I also think that claiming every person that is coming here illegally is a criminal. You know what I mean? And not just saying that they're a criminal and they're coming here. I'm also saying that because they're coming here makes them a criminal, because there are a lot of people that are truly desperate. And let me put it this way. If I had 5 kids and I lived in Venezuela and I lost my job, my house, and the $10 in my pocket was worth 3 cents, and someone said, hop in my car, we're going to America, I probably would do it. I'm not faulting them for that. But the question is, how does America handle this? And if we want to have open borders and we want to have a full-fledged welfare state, and America is just taking care of everyone, then America should be making the decisions for everyone. If that's what Mexico wants, then Mexico should forfeit their government to America and let America come in there, govern them, make their decisions, and fix their problems for them. And that's a crazy idea that would never happen. But that's I have the same kind of viewpoints with the UN or whatnot. We fund 90% of the UN, but make none of the decisions. We allow, what we do is we do all the funding, do all the providing of equipment, but then we let France and India make decisions on what's going to be happening. You know, if we're not going to be making the decisions, why are we funding it? You know, it's just other people using our money for their benefit. If America is the moral world police, if you think America should be the moral world police and should be spending billions of dollars funding these other nations, cool. But don't get upset when America starts strong-arming and making the decisions for how that money's used. I don't even know where we're at right now, Nick. We just are talking.
Yeah, we kind of went off topic, but I don't know. I agree. I don't mind going off topic either. It's more the idea how, like, you and I, we don't hate immigrants, we don't hate illegal immigrants, I generally don't have a feeling about where you're from or anything like that.
I'd even go against
immigration. It's just, we also got to have a logical conversation about it with reason and facts.
Right. I would almost say,
with the solution rather than.
I'd almost say that and we'll talk about it here in a little bit. I think they're smart. I think that's smart as fuck. I think that if you're a person who escaped absolute destitute and got your entire family into America and got a Southern California house with a hard-working job doing whatever you're doing, you win. And I'm like, you made it. Good for you. The question isn't fuck those people. The question is, you know, what do we do to make decisions to look out for the welfare of Americans and for the welfare of people? You know, if we want to care about people, then we have to make decisions that are economically feasible for us to be able to look out for people other than just Americans. I think it's great to see someone crush life that much. I'm not totally opposed to making sneaky decisions to benefit you and your family, as long as you're not murdering somebody and you're not stealing from people. Hey, you won. The world is there's less rules in this world than most people believe. But there was,
as long as there's no victim at the end of it.
Right. And we're going to talk about it here. We're about to go into talk a little about Jesse Smollett. And it's not going to be the same. Once again, that's
what me and Nick do here is come up with solutions and come up with, you know, unique ways to look at things, and it's gonna come off a little different. So, not even talking about Jussie Smollett at the beginning. We're gonna talk about the state's attorney, or the what county was it again?
Cook County.
Cook County attorney Fox. So here's the first quote I'm going to read you is from police officers. And then the second one is going to be from her. So the first one is from police officers. We have problems getting felony charges approved for battery to police officers. I've had officers in my office where their kneecaps were broken, where their fingertips were bitten off, and we can't get felony charges approved. And then from Cook County lawyer Fox, I was elected by the people to prevent harm, ensure community safety, and uphold the values of fairness and equal justice. I'm proud of my record on doing it, and I plan to do so through the end of my term. And then she talks about how she's going to still run for re-election regardless. And so here's the point. The point is, everyone knows that we need some justice reform. I believe in, and Nick just talked about it, victimless crimes. Marijuana. Why is that stuff not legal now? If not for the fact that it's economically unfeasible to be putting hundreds of thousands of people in jail for it and taking care of them, which is should be the last thing you think about. But on top of that, you know, why is weed illegal? I don't know. And then you go into furthermore, should people be spending time in hardcore prison for victimless crimes if they forgot to pay their taxes or they chose not to? I'm not saying there shouldn't be a punishment. If we live in a country where we require taxes, then make them pay their taxes. But should someone be going to jail for 20 years for tax evasion? I don't know if I believe in that. But what? Here's the thing with, here's my opinion on Fox. She says that she's trying to make Cook County better. Okay, that's good. But how are you doing it? I think she's taking the lazy way. I think she's taking the lazy way out. If she's gonna say that she wants to better the community, she should be proactive. She should be getting her boots dirty, getting out there and doing things to better the community. She should be creating systems, creating community organized events, ways to prevent people from becoming criminals, to better the community. What she's doing, and as you see some of this, what she's doing, she's saying that it's not these people's fault that they're criminals, which I can agree with. A lot of these people, they came from a hopeless background. They came from a place where they grew up with crime, so they ended up being criminals. But what she's doing is simply not punishing people for committing these crimes. Are you really preventing crime if you just choose to let someone who's guilty of assault or some sort of, you know, violent crime against a police officer, if you choose not to punish them, are you creating less crime, or are you just ignoring the fact that the crime's there? Is that really helping the community? Are you really making things more equal by letting someone bite the fingertips off a cop and then not punishing them? That seems like the lazy way out. You're just not punishing people for their crimes. You're not preventing the crime in the first place by making communities better and making communities less violent and making communities where their citizens aren't biting the fingers off of cops in the first place. That's my opinion.
Well, yeah, I agree. I feel like she's not necessarily rewarding people for these violent crimes. She's just not punishing them for them, which essentially makes it, I guess, not incentivized. It doesn't show people that you will get punished for this. It lets people know that you can get away with it. And then if people think they can get away with it, more people are going to do it.
Well, that's a whole nother conversation to say that, does this kind of behavior promote crime? I don't even know if I want to have that discussion. I'm simply saying she's making things more equal. She's making communities better. And what all I see is her, basically what she's trying to do is not have people within her community be unjustly punished at a higher rate
than other communities that are more wealthy or have less crime. And my point is simply what you should be doing to make things more equal is bettering the community, not just refusing to punish the crimes that are committed. If the crime rate stays the same, because there's people, the victims of these crimes, people want to say, you know what I mean? People want to say that the police are the victims of these crimes, which they are here. They want to say all this stuff where, like, did the criminal get held accountable for his actions? And the way I look at it is, who cares if the criminal gets held accountable for the actions? Because for me, I'm about solutions, and the crime's already been committed. And whether or not they get punished is an argument for someone else to have. I don't care. If someone commits, if there's a serial killer that commits 100 murders, you know, whether obviously he should be punished, but do I really care, or do I care the fact that those 100 people got killed? You know, it's about preventing these crimes. It's about creating a community where these crimes aren't being committed in the first place. Because, yeah, maybe the family might get a little bit of, you know, ease by seeing the criminal being prosecuted, but they would rather have their family member back. They'd rather have this crime not be committed in the first place. So that's where her efforts should be facing. I'm not saying that they're not. I'm not saying she's not, but.
Oh, well, I see what you're trying to say, man. But also you got to care if they get punished for it, if they do get arrested and all that. That's important, because if these people aren't getting punished for these crimes, who's to say that they're not going to do it again?
I understand what I'm saying. I'm trying to just have a bigger philosophical argument here and say that she's saying that she's helping the community and making things more equal, and she's not. She's just refusing to punish the crimes, and that's not making the communities better. That's what I'm saying. That's my point here, is I think that her statement is bullshit. I think her statement's bullshit. And
Well, yeah, you know, so like, the main reason why we started talking about this was Jussie Smollett. He had 16 felonies all just dropped, and he walked away from the courtroom after smiling.
Well, I guess if you take him out of the equation, it really was a victimless crime outside of him putting the noose on his neck. But at the same time, you know, could those police have been stopping another crime when they were busy with him? I'm not sure. In a place like Chicago, though, you never know.
Well, a story just came out recently how officers, and like, they're just basically suing him for the waste of resources that they use investigating the crime.
100%. For real. It makes total sense. But just, we're done with Jussie Smollett. What I wanted to talk about was the fact that he got off. Not his crime whatsoever, the fact that he got off. So people are saying that it's corruption on her part, that Michelle Obama's aide or chief of staff basically told Fox not to prosecute him. And it's not even based on her words. It's the fact that if you get a text message from Michelle Obama's chief of staff and she says, you know, in a way that she doesn't want him to get punished, whether or not she's explicitly asking, you're already thinking, okay, what does Michelle Obama want me to do? And in this case, it was Michelle Obama is friends with Jussie Smollett. She probably doesn't, she's probably not texting me to ensure he gets punished. She's texting me to try to see if there's anything I can do to not get him punished. And whether or not that played a role is apparent, because he didn't get punished. So the first thing is that corruption? Is it corruption? By corruption, are you defining that people are using the system to their advantage? Or are you saying that something illegal occurred? Because something illegal did not occur, to my knowledge. Because my understanding of district attorneys is that their job is to decide whether or not you should punish a crime. So if there's even in heinous crimes, they look and see, is there enough evidence to prosecute, or are we going to spend a year and millions of dollars to try to prosecute this person, but they're going to end up getting off because there's evidence isn't there. So they'll decide, hey, we're not going to prosecute. They also do things like okay, a bunch of teenagers just got arrested for smoking weed. Do we really want to put them in jail? They decide not to. They decide to do lesser punishments like community service and things like that. So it's well within her right to choose not to prosecute Jussie Smollett. And I think that, so I think answer to that question is it corruption? Yes, but no, it's not. It's not actually illegal what she did. So then the second question is there anything we could do to change that? For all of the people out there who feel like they're slighted for it, even the cops who feel like money was wasted, is there anything you can do to stop that? I would once again answer the question with no. Because what it is me and Nick talk about it all the time. What is the one of the biggest facets to success? It's social connections and social networking. Are you going to be able to stop people from having that connection with Michelle Obama? I don't think you are. The only reason why we're even hearing about this case is because it was a major headline. And the only reason why it was a major headline is because it initially came out as this actually happened. So then the liberal media blew it up as like, look what happened to Jussie Smollett. So that's the reason why it was even a big case in the first place. Outside of this, this stuff happens all the time. There's people, we talked about Jeffrey Epstein, who literally ran a child prostitution ring, is what we can call it, in his Florida mansion, and had people like Bill Clinton go there and spend. Bill Clinton went on 26 flights with Epstein to Thailand. Let's put it that way. And not even to let people off, because Jeffrey Epstein was also friends with Trump to some extent, whether they were business partners in some aspect or they were legitimately friends, you know. And then the person, the prosecutor, the Florida Attorney General at the time, who let him go and dropped all charges, became Donald Trump's Secretary of Labor, I believe. So to say that this kind of corruption doesn't exist would be wrong. It happens all the time. And so my question is, what's the solution? And I would say the solution is not to sit back and complain. The solution is to some extent, hop on board. I'm not saying become a Jeffrey Epstein or Jussie Smollett, but it seems pretty obvious that your social connections have a huge factor in your life and your success. So instead of complaining that other people have those connections, why not work on building your own connections that are going to help benefit you? You want to tell your story, Nick?
Yeah, so basically how Mason was saying, this kind of stuff happens all the time. The only reason why people know about this is because it was major headline news for like a week before they found out he was lying about it. So this stuff happens all the time, not with 16 felonies, of course, but with misdemeanors and just other citations. I was once at a concert a couple years ago where a couple people who I was underage at the time, but some of the other people I was with were also underage, and they got caught drinking by some undercover cops, and they got a ticket, and they had to go to a courthouse and basically do all that stuff. But when they were there waiting to pay off their ticket and all that, they were pulled off to the side because one of the people who were caught, their mother was either a DA or assistant DA. So they knew people in the district office, and they basically got their friend to basically drop the charges for them. There's no existence of it ever happening to them. While they were also there, there's about 20 other people waiting for their fee that they're going to have to pay, or like the mandatory drinking classes that they're going to have to go to. Right. So that's just like on a smaller scale of it happening, just not.
Let's take it one scale even lower. If you are a lawyer, a judge, a police officer, a firefighter, and you get pulled over for speeding, and you get let off because you're in the military or you're a police officer off duty and you get off, is that corruption? Because that's what just happened there, was having the social connection by being in the military or being a police officer and getting off. So is that also wrong? Or is that just one of the benefits of being a police officer and being in the military, is that you have a connection with the police officer that's pulling you over and then they let you off? That's what I'm saying here. So in Nick's case, if you're one of the people where who you're sitting in the courtroom and you're getting your ticket, do you sit there and go, damn, I wish those people that got off got fined and had to go to class with me? Are you hoping that on them? Or are you saying, good for you, you knew how to play the system and you had a social connection that benefited you. Good for you. It sucks to be me. Maybe I need to start to build those connections that are going to help me out. And that's really what the whole point of this whole thing is. It's all about your mindset. It's about how do you view things like this. Do you, if you sit there and you complain and you say, this is unfair, I want those people to be punished to bring them down to my level, then I think you're a loser. I think the way you need to look at it is, wow, look at them. They were able to use this situation to their advantage. How can I better myself? How can I raise myself to that level to where I can have a friend that's going to help me out when I get in a sticky situation? We're talking a real gray area, but that's what a lot of people don't want to do. That's, you won't hear that a lot, but that's what me and Nick are doing here. We're talking a gray area where, like, we're even talking about getting away with lower level crimes, like, but it's reality. And if you don't talk about it, then how will you ever understand it? And that's what's happening here is, straight up, if I had a friend that was in the police force and I got pulled over, or even if I got a DUI and he could get me off, you tell me I'm not going to take advantage of that. Well, how many of you would? How many of you wouldn't take advantage? How many of you would say, well, I'm holding myself to a higher moral standard and I'm going to accept this DUI because I messed up? No, you're all going to take advantage of having that social connection. So instead of trying to, you know, be mightier than God and try to play this role of, you know, that was corruption, fuck them, you would do the same thing if you were in that position.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, so in the Jussie Smollett case, just to keep it there, he had connections which helped him get off with 16 felonies. All the felonies weren't, I guess, necessarily violent felonies. He didn't hurt anyone or anything like that. We're not saying if you commit murder and you have the connections that we would be okay with you getting off with it. What we're saying is more for lower level crimes, for things that will impact your life when they probably shouldn't, you should use your connections as you can.
What I'm saying is, meet
people, go out there, work with these people.
What I'm saying is even more, I mean, it's different. What I'm saying is, we're not even saying that it's right. We're just saying that it's reality. We're saying that there's things in this world that you disagree with that are facts, that are realities, and you can't change. And that's one of them. Having social connections, and social connections being one of the most important things in this life, is a fact that will never change, no matter how much you think it's right, no matter how much you think it's wrong. So we're simply saying, we're not saying that we agree with it. I honestly think it's kind of shitty that they spent a few million dollars investigating this when it didn't happen, you know? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying, do I understand? 100,000,000% I understand why it happened, and it's a fact of life. And the only way to really learn anything from this is to understand that the right thing doesn't always happen, as if you needed me to say that. So do whatever you feel is right. Do whatever you're willing to do. But taking advantage of your social connections, I can't fault someone for that.
You're basically just got to join their game. You can stand on the outside and complain about it, or you can hop in the game too and try to move up, become successful, make connections, and just take every opportunity you can. So I guess when it comes down to it, it's not necessarily just about connections so you can get off crimes. It's connections overall is important. We've hammered we've beat the dead horse on this.
And on it's also
something that's going to happen.
Right. And also on the mindset part of it, if you just look at other people getting some sort of advantage and you hate them for it and say, I want them to suffer, then what does that say about you? You know what I mean? Instead of looking at them and saying, that was wrong for you to have that connection, you should be punished, I'm going to turn you in, why not be like, well, good for them, and then see what you can do to get there? That's really the point here. It's just talking about that aspect of life and you having a mindset of, how do I better myself? How do I make myself move to that next level? And what kind of mindset do I need to look at everything that happens in life with? I need to look at everything that happens in life is, this is the way it works, and what am I going to do to operate in this environment? It's the way I look at it.
Yeah, no, I look at it the same way. People don't like rich people or politicians or anything like that because everyone has that corruption idea of it. Like, there's, I guess, not sketchy people. Or, yeah, they're sketchy people. They do sketchy things to get ahead and all that.
Right.
You can complain on the sidelines
and
make change, which mm-hmm. we've talked about that, making change. Or you can hop in the game right. and try to beat them out.
So that's the one way to look at it. If you want this to change, you can't change it from sitting in your house getting angry and complaining. If you want to make change, get a haircut, throw on a suit, run for office, and try to actually make change to end these sort of things from happening, if that's what you care about. But don't just sit around complaining. Go out there and do something about it. Do something to, if you want to see your personal morals and your personal ideals be forced on the population, well, there's people doing it every day, and they're called politicians. So go become a politician and make it happen. And I'll just finish with this, is the people who do sit there and complain and wish other people would be hurt, what I look at it is that they just are incompetent. They don't see what they don't have the vision or the work ethic to be successful. If you are jealous for someone else's success, you don't have the vision or the work ethic to think you can get there. Like, for instance, when I see a rich person, I get excited. I think to myself, okay, this person's rich. That's one more person that was successful. That means that it's possible, you know? Especially when you see someone that has it, well, this is the best, is when people are like, well, that was a dumb idea. That was a horrible business plan. They got lucky. And I'm like, so you're telling me someone who's dumb and has a bad idea was able to be successful? Well, damn, if they can do it, then your dumbass can do it too. My dumbass can do it too, you know? So your dumbass that's sitting in your room hating, you're just as likely to be successful with these guys. What's the difference? What separated them? They had vision and work ethic, and they went for it. They didn't even have a good idea. All they did was try, and it worked. So that's just the way you got to look at it. Everyone's success in life should inspire you and should get you excited to move forward in your own life. It should never demoralize you and get you to say, I can't do it, or they should be punished for doing it their own way. Just because someone knows how to play the game and use the system to their advantage doesn't mean they were wrong. Just means that you haven't quite got there yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's just people needing to change their mindset and just basically realizing that anyone can do it. Almost anyone can do it. I understand there's some people who are out there who are just dumb, can't do it. But most of you listening to the show and most people in the world can figure something out where they can become successful or take advantage of a situation that's come across them.
If a low-level actor, who I don't even know about, can be friends with the Obamas, you can find a way to be friends with somebody that'll give you a business loan or invest in your idea or give you some sort of information, or even not even talking about being an entrepreneur, that will give you a job that you want. If Jussie Smollett can be friends with the Obamas, you can find a way to convince your ideal job employer to hire you. It's possible. It can happen. And all you have to do is put in the work to get there. That's all I got. I think Nick's done talking too. So.
I got one more thing. It's not related to this, but just an announcement. I'm starting a second podcast just solo myself. Maybe Mason will make some appearances on it. But it's going to be just strictly political because I'm a political nerd. And we didn't want this podcast to be all politics, so I'm making another podcast. Probably come out within the next month or two. We'll keep you guys updated. So if you're interested in that, just be on the lookout. But other than that, I don't got anything else.
Well, as always, go ahead and join our Facebook group. Shoot us a message. We're open for new ideas. We're open for guest speakers. If you think you got something to say that can benefit the group, let us know. Anyways, till next time.